imagine a world, digital one, where you could have the same more or less use case where every company would have a metaverse space where everybody could experience and feel something in it.
Kind of reminded of Morpheus in The Matrix, where he says you can't really explain what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself. Hi, everyone, and welcome once again to the Sports Pro Podcast. My name is Owen Connolly. I'm the editor-at-large at Sports Pro. Hope you're well. 2021 is nearly done. We're getting to that stage now where we'll all be reflecting on the events of the past 12 months. But some of the big developments in the sports tech space are going to very much outlive this year and maybe even define how sport is played and watched and run for a long time to come. Helping us make sense of some of the most talked about technology trends of 2021 is Jean-Baptiste Alliot, co-founder and chief strategy officer at Paris-based La Source, a sports consulting agency that guides startups through the industry and also advises sports organizations on their innovation strategies. Jean-Baptiste has also worked with European soccer's UEFA for the past decade and set up the UEFA Innovation Hub. He explained how businesses in sport can think practically about innovation and also through a sports industry lens on the year's tech discussions. He looks at how remote workflows and digital experiences will evolve as in-person activity returns over a longer period. He runs through what cryptocurrencies and other blockchain-enabled products like NFTs really mean for sports rights holders and whether there's a need to separate the long-term potential of the technology from the darker or frothier elements of the market. He tells us what sports should be making of the metaverse, what it is about the concept that will matter, and how the industry should be preparing for Web3. And he talks a bit about how challenges like sustainability can be factored into innovation strategies. Jean-Baptiste is also a judge for the startup competition at Ignition, a new event and product showcase platform from SportsPro that's going to be bringing together some of the most transformative ideas in tech with investors and sports bodies. It's all very exciting and unlike anything SportsPro has done before, and it's all going to be happening online from the 26th to the 28th of January. If you want to find out more about it and about the Ignition Innovation Competition, the winners of which will be awarded a $100,000 growth package, then head to ignition.sport. That's ignition.sport. It's all going to be part of a big focus on innovation across SportsPro's platforms in the early part of next year as we accelerate into the rest of 2022. Lots to look out for. Right now, though, let's hear from Jean-Baptiste Alliot. Jean-Baptiste Alliot, co-founder and chief strategy officer at La Source. Welcome to the SportsPro podcast.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So we're going to be chatting through some of the tech trends that have made an impression on the sports industry in 2021, trying to make a bit of sense of them and what their implications might be in the years ahead. And we're also going to tee up Ignition, which is the new event platform and project from SportsPro for 2022. But first of all, let's just set the terms of the conversation a bit here, JB. You are with La Source. You've previously been with UEFA, or you kind of currently still involved with UEFA. But what is La Source and what brought you to work there?
To start with, I mean, briefly, La Source is an agency around digital startups and new technologies. What we do is mostly we handpick startups, what we believe to be the best, and usually we help them to accelerate in Europe and beyond. And at the same time, more than startups, we've realized that there's also needs for sports organizations actually to be helped and supported in terms of putting together an innovation strategy, in terms of navigating the trends, understanding the markets. And so this is what we do. But on my side, it was more of a personal trajectory, let's say, because in 2020, for personal reason, my wife relocated for Paris 2024. were expecting a baby. While coming back to Paris, I knew the guy, and that's how it finally happened, that we could merge, I would say, the different expertise, like Sam being very much on the BD side, marketing side, David have an extensive and a very good knowledge on the product side and the back end of the technologies, and my side a bit more also on the understanding also the rights holders, the startups and this ecosystem and this network, so that we came together actually quite well, and since then it's a good journey so far.
It's interesting that, because you, as you mentioned, you've brought together different experiences as they relate to the tech sector, different entry points, I guess, into the sports industry. How would you say that relationship between sport and technology has changed in the last few years?
The relationship has changed clearly, but it didn't change much. I mean, the thing is, I would say it's rather the perspective or the awareness and the need to rely on technology and to the new needs of the connected fan, which has changed from sports organizations. So I would say that for long, and I usually say that, I think sport has remained in a bubble, and compared to other industries, it has been slower to change, or they were more of a conservative approach. And that's sometimes still the case. I mean, this goes back to the traditional business model and the traditional media rights value chain in sports, I would say. And so for long, it has been quite traditional. And I think what the pandemic has made happen was, like, you had this, okay, technology is a nice to have, or that's something on the side, or that's something we need to look at, but now it's a must have. So I think this is the relationship. And to me, it's technology has always been there, and as it has become more and more part of our lives every day in terms of what we do, how we live, how we watch sports, how we do practice sports, how we practice anything, or how we just live life, I think this has also an impact into sports. And so as this has been growing, sports organizations have been slow at the beginning to react to that. And now I think there is a full understanding of that in terms of, like, we that's a must have, and that's something we need to be interested in, or that we need to master for our future.
You know, one of the things that you do at La Source, but also one of the things that you would have experience of with your time at UEFA, is integrating an innovation strategy. What does that mean for an organization, or what's it going to mean in 2022?
Yeah, so a bit going, I mean, from your former questions, the idea around the technology is that, okay, it's very much on digital transformation or some products and some services, but the thing is, while this is becoming more and more important, and I guess, I mean, everybody now is a bit aware of what is the metaverse or all the NFTs and crypto things that are going around, that's something new. That's a new world coming to us. That's part of a fourth industrial revolution. But the idea is that you need, for sports organizations and even for any organization, some kind of an innovation strategy. And when I say innovation strategy, it's not something only related to technology or digital. This is where it's very much important. And that plays a crucial role in terms of understanding for sports organizations how you can remain relevant. So the idea for an organization, I think it's to think a bit more in terms of, like, okay, what are the future trends? How can we catch them? And it's a bit, how do I organize myself? How do I put processes and people, so my innovation capabilities, into place to make sure I can adapt, I can be flexible to new situations popping in, so that I can remain relevant. And so clearly technology plays a key role and a key part, because it drives the change and the new society where we are heading, whether being good or bad, that's not me to answer that questions, but this is what's driving the change. But the innovation strategy is more just like data. It's to support a strategy, and it's how you put the organization capabilities in terms of remaining relevant, and potentially that you will need technology to serve certain strategic priorities, but it's not fully and solely dedicated to new technologies, I would say, or to digital transformation.
Hmm. Are there any tangible or concrete examples you can point to where either you've advised a client, or you've done this in your other roles when you've been able to put that into action?
Yeah, so clearly WebFi was the best, I mean, use case in terms of putting together some intrapreneurs projects. I can also name, I mean, the NBA was doing it. I mean, Dapper Labs and Home Court came from intrapreneur initiative from a strategic standpoint. We've been working as well with on different intrapreneurs project where it was not just, like I said, technology driven. It could be around new ways of practicing football. So the non-traditional football, not the 11 side that everybody knows. It could be also how do we minimize unconscious bias in the selection and recruitment process. So because you want a diverse workforce, because it's more efficient or it drives better value for the organization. So these are some of the examples. And obviously we did a startup challenge. We also had an open innovation scheme, and we worked with different partners because we cannot do everything on our own. I mean, to a certain extent, innovation is also like partners and an ecosystem of partners. So there were initiatives that were made, but mostly was, I would say, three main things, which was like, first, the long-term view in terms of how do you acculturate the staff, how do you equip the staff with new tools, new methodologies, a new way of thinking, potentially to create new business lines internally. And that's a bit of a long-term process. That's not something happening overnight, but that's what you do in different initiatives. Then you can have quick wins with connecting with the startups or research world or other partners in terms of addressing some of our business needs and pain points. And then you have another one, which is a bit more of a, I would say, a prospective or a business intelligence, where it's more like, where are we heading? So it's a bit more of a curate approach where you try to think a bit, okay, what will be next? Where are we heading? And how do I make sure I'm not lagging behind or that I'm preparing wisely for this new shift?
Okay, let's dive into some of the trends that people have been talking about in 2021 and see how relevant they're going to be or what kind of ramifications they're going to have for sport and the sports industry in 2022 and the rest of the decade. I mean, we're a couple of years now, amazingly and depressingly, into the COVID-19 crisis. What assessment can we make at this point about how, you know, remote experiences and also remote working patterns and workflows, how they've progressed, whether they've changed course, whether they've accelerated, whether we're seeing adoption happen in unexpected ways, or whether this has just brought everything forward, as I think people were kind of saying a year or so ago?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, sorry for the audience. It's a bit end of the day and I had like 7 back-to-back interviews. So my head is like completely freezing every time. And I think I need some rest at some point. But while I'm saying that is just because part of the meetings I was having with directors and C-levels from a sports organization was like, most of the talk also, they were telling me how much COVID-19, okay, that sucks. But ultimately for them, looking at the bright side of things, like this has accelerated things a lot on their processes, on the way people thought we could not change the way we were doing things and how now it's all blown away and we can organize things remotely and we don't need to fly in 20 people or we don't need to, for some events, to do the old way. So for me, I think in terms of processes, that's what I was saying. It's a bit the adoption. It's now I think you don't need to fight to make your case or to make people aware. I think even the old guards, I mean, the C-levels or the leaders who usually tend to be older than the managers in sports organizations have realized that it's a must-have. I mean, without it or without like remote, they would have been in big problems. And that goes way beyond, I think, remote. It's it's not just your daily meetings, but it's how do you broadcast remotely, but also how do you activate partnerships? How do you keep working actually while being under lockdown or not being able to really go to the stadium? So I think on that side, just like for any other industry, COVID has just accelerated things. That's not something new. I mean, remote production existed before. You could do Zoom meetings prior to that. The only thing is that the adoption and the speed of use has been just like we've won, I think, 4 to 5 years in terms of adoption and in terms also of mindsets, and especially for the most conservative or those people who did not really realize the needs for this, that actually it's needed. And you know, even in some organization, it's funny, but for some people, like remote work is still like sitting on a couch, eating pizzas and watching movies. Yeah, you're laughing, but ultimately that's sometimes what people used to think. And actually, most of the organizations have sometimes performed way better during the pandemic than prior to that. And so I think that was also an eye opener. And I think the speed of adoption has like accelerated things a lot.
Yeah. At the same time, you know, you talk about the screen fatigue that you're going through today. This is the biggest experiment, the biggest kind of rollout of a technology like this that we've seen in a very, very long time in terms of the mass adoption of something that was on the fringes of the market just before that. How do you think the relationship between, you know, the physical and digital experience is going to change? Is there going to be a kind of natural sorting? Does this come back to what you're talking about with the innovation strategy, where you have to identify where technology is solving problems, where it's, you know, not being as efficient as it could be?
Well, we'll see on that. I think the phygital concept, I mean, I think I've been the first time, remember, with I was 2018 actually for the strategy, and even 2019 with the metaverse. It's to a certain extent, it's always like the things in life. It's just a balance. And even for some teams, you would need to be in the office or you need to be on premises. So it's a bit different from other team, or if you are alone and you need to do some desk research or writing. I mean, it all depends on the need. And I think the screen fatigue, yes, that's right. And going to one extreme to another, I mean, I'm not saying you should be 5 days working remotely per week, but it could be a mix, it could be a balance, it could depend a bit on your workload and charge. But going back on the phygital, I think that's just something where the technology is not yet there. But, you know, you were referring to all the 2021 buzz, and I think all the Meta and so Zuckerberg announcement and Microsoft behind it and all these kind of things. It's, I mean, for long we've been talking about it. We know it's not there, but it will take time. It will take this decade to actually come into like a reality in terms of like how do you goes from one world to another, if you want, like just like having a complete seamless experience. So that's not the case today. But this is where we're heading. And I think in terms of like screen fatigue, yes, that's right. But it's also because we were to a certain extreme in terms of like you could not do anything without the screen. So, and actually that's a good reminder as well that people, I mean, are human beings and tend to be social. And so you want to go outside, you want to watch concert, not just in Fortnite, or you want to go to the stadium. But There are ways to serve different people, different fans. And yeah, for me, it's just a learning in terms of like, that's possible, but going to one extreme is not necessarily what you wish for.
You mentioned the metaverse there, which we will get onto in just a sec. But one of the technologies that is perhaps going to enable a kind of full expression of that, whatever that means, is blockchain. And we've seen you know, it's been a gathering storm for a couple of years, but we've seen a hell of a lot of interest in wider culture in the economy, and also particularly in the sports space, in crypto, in fan tokens, in NFTs. I don't know if you think it's worth separating those three or if it's something you can kind of take together, but What do you think the state of play is there? Do you think this year we've seen adoption, but are we seeing technology that's a little bit in search of a utility or of a market at the moment? It's kind of at the testing phase, the investing phase.
Yeah, I think you're just at an early stage market that needs to mature. So for people, I mean, crypto is just a digital currency. I mean, they all rely on the blockchain technology when you talk about fan tokens or NFTs. And so all these non-fungible tokens, the idea is that by being on the blockchain, you know the unique identity and the ownership of the person. And so I think when you're speaking of NFTs as a digital asset in the digital world or fan tokens, and I think you are referring to the utility tokens, so a bit on the Socios model, where it serves the purpose of an organization. I think what you need to keep in mind is that today this world is very young. It's a bit where was the internet in the late 90s. So you have to think of NFTs, and I think of to a certain fan tokens and NFTs are Web3. So what it means is when the internet was created, it was purely you could read. So you were creating a website, you would put in information, you could read. Web2 with the tech giants, it could be like read and create. So actually, you could create your own content. You could go on Facebook. You could go on Insta. You can create your own content, but you don't own it. So you are not the owner of it. Or you can buy things in a video game, for instance. But next year, you guess what? You have to buy it again, and you don't own anything. So the idea is that with NFTs and crypto, not crypto, but tokens, using cryptocurrency to acquire them, the idea is that beyond reading and creating, you would own what you've done. And that makes a lot of difference. And for me, it's where we are today. So 2021, I would say, is a bit like the 1998 or the 1997 of the internet in terms of like, that's the next big thing. That's the big platforms coming in. And so clearly, we're still very much at an early stage. I think there is only maybe 10 million NFTs being acquired. I mean, people that have acquired NFTs. And I think in the gaming world, you have like 3 billion players. And I think only 3 million are playing on games that are relying on Web3. So, I mean, you're just at the beginning. And what you can read on, it's true that there is money laundering. It's true that there are problems with this new product or assets. But the idea is that this market will come into something more and more mature as much as the adoptions will grow. And I think people don't really realize the magnitude of it. But when we're talking about fan tokens and NFTs, this is really a big revolution in terms of like, we're talking a bit like a change of scale, like the internet was 25 years ago. And that's a bit the same with the metaverse. And so I think that's a bit important in terms of understanding the magnitude of it and the shift of it. And it will not happen overnight, clearly. But if you are sports organizations or even like in art or anything, you have to understand that what's happening there will have clearly an impact on how you will be driving your business in the future and how you will engage with your fans, because this is unique to have some kind of a real loyalty program where you do engage way beyond what you've been able to do so far. And so I think that's we're just starting to see the revolution. Even myself or many people or even experts cannot see the magnitude of it. Because we're still building it, and it's still very much expensive actually to build the NFTs. I mean, to have it on the blockchain, it's quite costly. It's like when you were creating your websites a bit like early 2000 or late 90s. But clearly it will get better, and clearly you will see that the adoption will go faster than people believe.
I mean, in the immediate term, particularly from a sports industry perspective, is the challenge to kind of separate this story about the frothiness of the market. There's a lot of money in there, as you say. There's some quite dark money that's involved in some cryptocurrency companies in particular. there's kind of going to be a degree of wastage on NFTs. It's going to be an asset class that as a whole gets overvalued because, you know, elements of it, there's a bit of novelty value in an NFT. It's kind of the beanie baby maybe of the digital asset class in some respects. But then there are also going to be things that have a genuine kind of retained value over time. But, you know, there's all this talk about sponsorship. There's so many crypto, you know, currency companies that are awash with cash and they're spending on sponsorship in sport. You have the crypto.com arena in the US, et cetera, et cetera. So there's that story, which is all about the buzz, about the money, about everything else. Does that need to be separated from the education about what's possible, what the potential of the technology is, what its utility might be going forward, and how organizations in sport need to start preparing for that mindset change over time?
I think you need to look at the two. I mean, always, even at the beginning of new waves and new shifts, and especially with the fourth industrial revolution, you will always have, like, it's clear that you have pitfalls around NFTs. But there's also, like, as every change, you will have people that will be telling you it's money laundering, it's a black market or whatever you want. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's like human beings in the real world have always been collecting things, being art or whatever, like DVDs or even like jerseys or foot boots or whatever, or Panini cards, name them. The only thing is that NFTs are just allowing you to do the same, but in the digital world. So everything that you could, or that you were having, or that you were buying or creating into the digital world, you were never owning it. For the first time, we're allowing you as any human being, what we've been doing for centuries now, is like you can do it even in the digital world. And so the idea for me is that it's you need to raise awareness around that, because what it means is that beyond the only collector or speculation, like making money incentives for some of these early adopters or the first users of NFTs and maybe fan tokens, you have behind it way more human behaviors and fan behaviors in terms of like, how does that relate to emotions, to passions, and how do you then can create new ways to think about your own business model in terms of partnerships, in terms of like you were mentioning sponsors and everything like that. I think clearly there is a new revenue streams, and what you were saying in terms of like all these buzz and all this money is that there is a race today for these big companies or these new startups to actually become the platform of tomorrow, because you want to quickly gain access to all the markets to make sure you become the next Google or the next Amazon on this Web3. And so clearly there is a race there where there's a lot of money, there is a lot of buzz, and you have clearly, like in early markets, you have collectors and you have people that are here just to invest and to make money. But you should not stop there. I mean, if you're a sports organization or if you're someone working in sports, you need to go further and you need to understand what will be the implications of Web3, what will be the implications of NFTs and fan tokens, and even in terms of engagement for the fans, in terms of like fans wants to be rewarded, they want to have a voice, they want to be part of the strategy of the organization they are standing for. And here NFTs are just allowing you to do that. And you can even like think even beyond the pure digital side of things, where you would acquire a part of a club or you would acquire some kind of a jersey or a card in a fantasy game. But the idea is like it goes beyond and it's not closed. So there is this idea of portality so that you could move it to either other digital worlds. So it's not like in one world and that's it. It's not in one video game and then, or it's not in one Candy Crush or in one game and you can use it. It can be used everywhere under Web3. But the idea is also that it can reward you physically, I mean, in the real world. So you could have access to certain areas, to a certain events. You could go to backstage. Maybe you could have a dinner with someone. Whatever you are inventing, I mean, as much as you are creative, you can invent anything and you can do NFT of everything. But the idea is that people will own something and will feel part of it. And I think, okay, you need to understand the pros and cons and all the buzz around it, but you would need definitely to go way beyond that so that people understand and prepare best their organizations and the way they are doing business in this Web3 era.
When we're talking about Web3, the manifestation of it that everybody has got very chatty about in the last few months, especially, and not least since Mr. Zuckerberg made his big play. What was that, about 4 weeks ago? Metaverse is the buzzword. Maybe it's the buzzword of the year. It's certainly the buzzword since the middle of the year. What should people understand that term to be? Because there's kind of not a consensus of what it means altogether. And probably as the technology evolves over, and we might be talking 10, 20, 30 years here, there's going to be different, it's going to mean different things to different people. There's going to be different iterations of it. So if you're advising someone in the sports industry, what would you tell them to understand that term to be?
Yeah, okay. So on the metaverse, it's not that easy. Clearly, like, now it has become a buzzword. I remember trying to explain that to C-levels, even at WEFA, back in late 2018, 2019. And that was not easy, even the NFTs and the blockchain technology. So I will try to go from there. But I was doing the same. Like, you need to think of the metaverse today as the internet of 25 years ago. So it's not Web3, but you need to think of it as a platform as much as the internet has been changing our lives. And so it's not just one world. It's not just, I mean, there are different layers. And there I will give acknowledge to Matthew Ball. And for anybody listening to us, I think his blog is just amazing. And that's how also I've been like learning and trying to equip myself as well to try to understand that few years back. And he was very impressive in terms of putting that together. But for me, when you think of the metaverse, you need to think of a massive virtual world where everything you're doing in your real life, like I was saying, practicing sports, learning, creating, I don't know, watching concerts or whatever, this is something you will be able to do also in a mix with digital people. I mean, with people which are not there with you, but that will be living with you through this kind of metaverse. And so this is some kind of an overlay, or this is a real seamless experience or environment where you have a mix between the real world and a digital one, and that you can interact with it. So that's the way, and that's hard to understand, or that's hard maybe to envisage or to see or to understand how that works. Because I think we've been talking a lot about VR and at the end it didn't work as much. And then we are now talking about a lot about the augmented reality or MR, so mixed reality. And we are touching, that's just the beginning of the metaverse. And I think we will need more. It's like the NFTs. We're just at the beginning, and we will need the technology to go further, to advance further, to make sure this kind of seamless experience, for me it's like a always on virtual environment. So meaning, like, if you're walking in the streets, if you're thinking like walking, you could have the real world and imagine an overlay where you would have something popping out, not just your emails, not just your social network feeds, but potentially you will see an advertisement somewhere. And I'm not here to say whether that's good. And ethically speaking, everybody can have his own views in terms of whether it's good or it's bad. But what you can see today on linear TV or anything where you have digital overlays and you can put, I don't know, different advertisers based on the country, based on the person watching. So a very highly personalized experience. This is what you will have with the metaverse. And so you will go outside, you will have something coming into the real world, very seamless, and potentially you will be able to interact with someone who is very far away in another country. And I'm not necessarily a huge fan of the Meta announcement and the big buzz around it, but that's a bit, I think, what they have been trying to showcase in this video they made at Meta.
Yeah, and I suppose you could also present information in that way. It wouldn't have to be advertising information if you're thinking about in a sporting context. It could be something to help explain play to a fan, or it could be statistics, or it could be whatever you want, a bit of history.
Yeah, but if on that, actually, if you're a sports organization, I'm just thinking, but if you go back to the internet analogy I was making, if you look today, everybody, every organization, every company, they have a web page. Whether we are now Googling it to access, I don't know. Maybe the voice world will change that and we will ask, I mean, we will go through voice to ask questions on a company. But if you think on the metaverse, the idea will be like, rather than going on a web page or asking Alexa or whomever through a voice, it's like there will be a world where you can go into a virtual one and where you can experience a company. So if you're UEFA, you could go into the UEFA world and you will leave the UEFA way. And potentially if you're a car manufacturer, guess what? You could learn about the OD experience into the metaverse, and maybe you will be driving a car, maybe you will be doing things. I mean, there are many ways to think about the metaverse, and I'm just making this analogy with the internet because for everybody today, it seems logical to have an internet and a web page of your company. Imagine a world, digital one, where you could have the same, more or less, use case where every company would have a metaverse space where everybody could experience and feel something in it.
Yeah. That's the idea. Kind of reminded of Morpheus in The Matrix, where he says you can't really explain what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself. Is it easier for people? I mean, are there ways that people can grasp this? Matthew Ball, for example, makes the comparison with Fortnite and says that's kind of the closest as close as you're going to get to like a fully operational metaverse simulation in today's world. You have Roblox as another example, the game targeted at slightly younger audiences, but where people kind of build their own experiences within that world. Is that a good way for people to get a handle on what this means, particularly because the framing is going to be way ahead of the technology for a couple of years at least?
I think it's an excellent start because you could think of like your avatars, just like Second Life back in 2000, but it was too early stage, I guess, when it popped out. But so Fortnite and even Roblox, like we heard about Nike doing their own land, but that's very much still Web 2. So you can create and you can live in this world, but you cannot own things. So the real power maybe of the metaverse will be around Web 3. But going back to the questions is, clearly everybody knows about the Travis Scott concert, driving millions of viewers and fans to a certain extent. And so this gives you like a grasp of what the metaverse could be like. Justin Bieber just did a recent also concert with Wave XR in terms of like in a digital mode. All these kind of virtual launches, off-platform engagement are really the beginning, and this kind of empowerment of the creators of what the metaverse and the Web3 will be about. And so when you think of it now, like people are getting used to put a value and a price on digital assets because they are used to, in this game being Fortnite or Roblox, you can exchange like cryptos like Roblox. And so the next generation will, for them, it will be completely normal to buy skin or gears for their own avatars, and they will have their representation of themselves in the digital world. And just like Facebook sounded very like my parents would not understand a clue of Facebook back in 2007, now they are all on Facebook. And guess what? I'm no longer on it, or we are no longer using it. But I guess that will be more or less the same with the metaverse, and what's happening is like everybody is asking, but what the fuck is that? Or are you serious about buying this amount of money just for a skin or anything? But guess what? This is where we're heading. And the new generation, what they are aspiring, what they are used to, is clearly around those lines. And I was mentioning, like, clearly Fortnite, Roblox can help in terms of understanding what it will look like. But again, if I go back to the gaming industries, every year you are buying new games, or you are paying for in-game activations or skins or anything like that, but you don't own anything. Imagine that you would do that, but then after, your avatar would have Nike or Adidas shoes that you own, and that you were the first one to own, or that there are only five people that owns it. And so that makes it completely a new scale, a new economy, and that makes it different. And it opened new ways, I think, for the metaverse and how you engage with it.
We're coming to the end here, but let's talk a little bit about some of the ways that technology can be leveraged to solve some pressing real-world problems. Sustainability has been, it is the now pressing issue of our time for the next few years to kind of try and mitigate the climate crisis and live in a slightly more responsible way. And there are other social issues as well. I mean, right at the top, you mentioned, you know, using innovation strategies to address things like unconscious bias and you know, maybe hiring practices, maybe other ways in which companies operate. What are some of the things that you've seen that may have flown under the radar, or that the organizations in sports should be aware of when it comes to some of those use cases?
Yeah, I know on the sustainability side of things, it's very much of a, it's on the organization to take bold decisions. And to a certain extent, I think the whole economic system has not managed yet to find a solution to it, because we are in between this kind of green growth. So saying like we can keep growing while we're asking to minimize the environmental damages and everything. So you're asking for more and for growth. And at the same time, you can say that this growth will be good for the planet. And I don't think for the moment we find the right solution. So really on the sports organization side, I think it's like the best way for the environment is not just to create new waste. I mean, if you think of waste or the way you are demanding on energy or anything like that, is like the best is not to recycle, it's just not to create it. And so finding a virtuous cycle and a model where you consume less, you do less in order to best preserve the environment, that's not something people have cracked. And I don't think any industry today have cracked it. And that's where I think the model, and we were talking about the metaverse and everything, but even all the digital, I mean, there's a huge debate around NFTs and their environmental impact, because relying on blockchain, when you mint, I mean, you have to use a lot of energy for NFTs and so forth to secure your NFTs and the uniqueness and all of that. And so to a certain extent, is it worth the energy it requires in terms of social goods? I don't know. If you're telling me maybe NFTs or whatever technology is helping to save lives or is promoting better social welfare or something like that, maybe the cost can be understood and you need to do it. But when it comes to potentially arts or sport collectibles, that's harder to defend to a certain extent. So going back to your questions on the sustainability side of things, I mean, there are plenty of ways that sports organizations have been trying to look at it, but still, and it's we no one has found really the answers, except like minimizing the impact on when you are delivering events. But there is not a real model today that can be very much like a long-term positive for the planet, I think. And that's something we need to think of. And the promise a bit of the digital and doing your concert remotely and having your sporting event remotely as well is good, because you're believing, or you're thinking like maybe you're not traveling, so all the CO2 emissions through planes and all of that, you're reducing them. But at the same time, you need to really have a proper assessment of all the technology needed, of all the, you know, new products, new things you need to actually put all of that together in the digital world. And so honestly, on the sustainability side, it's very much complex. And the level also of decisions between the people who have the venue, people who do organize the events, it's not always the same. And so you are not incentivized to do long-term investments when you just have a 3 weeks sporting events in a country. And so, yeah, there is a model to be found there. And I don't think like we have the right solution yet, but that's clearly something to look at.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, not an issue we're going to solve today, but one that I'm sure will occupy a lot of minds in 2022 and beyond. Just to wrap up, you're on the judging panel for the startup competition at Ignition, which is the new sports pro event and platform for technology and investment. What are you looking forward to there, and what are you looking for from that process?
First, thank you for the invite, and well done for putting that together. Honestly, it's like I've been seeing the judges, and there's my former colleague Craig. There are plenty of people I know there. So Ben from FIFA, I've seen like Mota, I think from FIVB, I mean Volleyball World. So first, it's good to be back with friends and to see what's going on. And my expectation, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, just like I was telling you, maybe prior to the start of the podcast, is that La Source is very much around quality. I mean, we handpick few of the startups that we believe to be the best. And so my expectation for Ignition, and because SportsPro is coming into that space around new tech startups and technologies, is that the level of maturity, the level of the product and the services will be very high. So my expectation is really around those lines in terms of like, I found that it fits perfectly well with what we're looking for in terms of, okay, we're not here just to do startups, to do startups or to have a new project, but we really want to have teams, products that do address real business needs and that can help us drive the sports industry forward. So that's what I'm looking for. And I think that through SportsPro network, I mean, we'll have very much like high profile experts and judges and people to take part. So I'm really looking forward to hearing to the different startups, because I hope we will have a very excellent and high quality deal flow in that competition.
Okay, well, we look forward to that. What are some of the other things more broadly in the sector that you point to or point people towards in 2022?
Well, I mean, yeah, definitely. I think what we've been talking about, the fan tokens and the NFT will continue to make the headlines, and everything which is around, I mean, 80% of the investments in the sports decks is related to fan experience, and most of it is to digital and media products. So that will continue. Data will need also to continue in terms of like, for sports organizations not to lag behind, but to be properly ready to really activate and use and rely on data. So I think this won't change. The metaverse and the NFT are very early stage, but that's something I think sports organizations need to look at and best prepare for the future. I mean, there is an innovation and a data depth concept that I have. And if you don't want to be lagging behind, you need really to invest into those. And I think that for the metaverse and the NFTs, that will be the same. And so you better start now if you don't want to be behind very soon. And the other one maybe I could say is something that we've bit touched upon during the pandemic was, you know, all this connected fitness. Obviously, people stayed at home, and you know, there was plenty of products and many startups or services pivoted in terms of like, how can you train at home or sports at home or this kind of thing. I think next year will also be like, there is also this kind of early stage market that I feel around health, nutrition, and sports in terms of like well-being, in terms of like, how do you address the mental load? What you referred to the screen exhaustion. So a bit, at the intersection of these three different industries, it's how can we have a new value proposition for men's and actually for women's, because the women's game is driving a lot of this as well in terms of like brands being bold into that domain, in terms of like, okay, how can we make sure that people, citizens are better aging, are living better lives, that we are trying to help them in terms of like taking care of their mental load and all of that. And I think this sector is still very much early stage, still need to find its way, but I think it will be growing, and that's something that I definitely will be looking at in 2022.
All right then. Jean-Baptiste, thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and happy to be in touch, guys.
The Sports Pro Podcast is published by Sports Pro Media.